together again with you on Connecticut Today, wrapping up a busy week, Friday, June the 11th. Dennis Kucinich joined us. He has a brand new book out, of course. Dennis, the former mayor of Cleveland, former multi-term congressman, Democrat from Ohio, and two-time presidential candidate. His book talked about threats made against him when he was trying to stave off a hostile turnover of one of Cleveland's two utility companies when he was mayor. And in the 4 o'clock hour, my buddy Craig Fishbein joined in once again. He, a state rep, Cheshire Wallingford, on the Republican side. He's also the ranking member on the General Assembly's Judiciary Committee. Craig highlighted some problems that the Republican House caucus has with the controversial recreational marijuana bill here in Connecticut. Another example of somebody who's got a far better resume from me, rather than me. Mayor of Cleveland, 1977 to 79, also spent time in the Ohio State Senate from 1995 1997, 16 years in Congress representing Ohio in the House, 1997, 2013, ran twice for the Democratic presidential nomination. He's been a cable news pundit, too. Dennis Kucinich joins us. Dennis, hi, it's Paul in Bridgeport, Connecticut. How are you?
Paul, it's good to join you and to have a chance to speak to people in Bridgeport. I'm very grateful for this opportunity.
Did I read also, Dennis, too, that you dabbled as a radio talk show host once, too? Did I read that correctly?
That's true. I did that. And I can tell anyone who's listening, you could not believe the amount of work that goes into preparing for a show. It's just, you know, for every hour, there's a few hours that go in. So I admire anybody who's doing that. But, yes, that's true.
Well, Dennis, that means you actually prepared. See, you're better than me. I try to wing it. But the name of your book, and this is a fascinating book that I've read these summaries of, The Division of Light and Power. So, Dennis Kucinich, you were the youngest big city mayor in America, and you're confronted with, let me make sure I understand this. There was a mafia contract on you because you wouldn't agree to something? Tell my listeners about that.
Well, when I was organizing a campaign to save our municipal electric system from a takeover by a utility monopoly, a high-powered rifle shot missed my head by a fraction. I found out I was elected mayor on a promise to save the system. And the book, it's almost like that's the second part of the book. But during the period when I was mayor, I was alerted by various state police and the police intelligence in the city of Cleveland that there was an active plot, assassination plot. And later on, I never talked about it publicly during that time. But afterwards, in 1984, the U.S. Subcommittee on Senate Subcommittee on Organized Crime in the Midwest went over the whole case and, you know, and revealed that there was a plot by organized crime to carry out an assassination during the time that I was mayor, and it was all about the light system.
So, Dennis, elaborate on that. What did the bad guys want here? What were you standing in the way of to the point, Dennis, where they said they had to get rid of you? Explain a little deeper what was going on here.
Well, yeah, Cleveland has had a municipal electric system since almost the turn of the 20th century. And at the same time, the formation of it was fought by a private utility, which became one of the most powerful monopolies in the country, the Cleveland Electric Illuminating Company. So they competed side by side in the city for decades and decades. Well, secretly, CEI, as the Cleveland Electric Illuminating Company is known, began to develop a program to put Muni Light out of business. The people didn't know about it, but I discovered that as a young councilman. And I exposed it, and there was court action that came about as a result of antitrust activity on the part of CEI. And all this information started to come out, and CEI needed to take over the municipal electric system because they were running into trouble on paying off the debts that were escalating on their nuclear power plant. So they needed a monopoly to have more customers so they could then raise the rates and pay in to pay off their debt. And I was the one who was standing in the way, you know. And so they, what I was told by the head of police intelligence is, you know, when I asked him, what about this assassination plot, he said, you're standing in the way of some people making a lot of money. And the plant at that point, the city's electric system was worth about $250 million. You know, today that would be billions. But and the electric company, private company, was trying to purchase it for a fraction of that. So that was one aspect. But then they would have a monopoly in Cleveland, be able to jack up everyone's rates to the sky and increase taxes for the city of Cleveland as well. So this was a high-dollar deal that I was standing in the way of.
Wow. Dennis Kucinich with us. Dennis, hang on. We'll be right back with you. Got to take a quick break. We'll do traffic and weather together. Back with former Cleveland mayor, former Ohio congressman, many terms in the House, former two-time presidential candidate Dennis Kucinich. Name of the book, The Division of Light and Power. An assassination plot was set in motion against him. Fortunately, it did not work because he was standing in the way of a takeover of a municipal electric outlet. Traffic and weather together, back with Dennis Kucinich, coming up right after this. And we continue for a few more minutes with the guest, the author of The Division of Light and Power, former Cleveland mayor, former multi-term member of Congress from Ohio, two-time presidential candidate on the Democratic ticket. Dennis Kucinich continues with us. Dennis, which title, mayor, congressman, presidential candidate, which one of those titles are you the most proud of?
The one that's Dennis. That's what people call me in Cleveland. That's all I need. I don't rest on ceremony. You know, I want to tell you, Paul, that keep in mind when this story starts, yeah. I was only 23 years old, elected to the city council, and then America's youngest mayor at age 31 when I was taking on these forces. And people need to keep that in mind, because I think what happened is, because I was so young, the big corporations thought that, hey, we got it made with this kid. But, you know, I felt it was more important to stand up for the rights of people, to have a utility they could call their own with the cheaper rates. And that's what I did. The book is the story about my journey. And the reader is comes right along with me, experiencing a Christmas blackout at the opening of the book. And when people find out who was creating the blackouts, they're going to go, whoa. And so I, you know, this whole book is about power. It's about in the literal sense, but it's also power in the sense of the systems of power within a city. And, you know, it's ultimately about whether or not we're going to have a democracy, or whether we're going to have rule by an elite that controls a city from behind the scenes.
And, you know, Dennis, oftentimes things like this, for example, simple utilities or microcosms for the battles that people face. Now, here in Connecticut, we have two major utilities, one with about 400,000 customers, another with about 1.3 million. And luckily, I live in one of the 10 towns, Dennis, that owns our own power company. So when I tell people the rates I pay in my town that are basically about one-third of one of the biggies, you know, their jaws hit the floor. So, yeah, I mean, we're talking about, from your experience to my experience, we're talking about billions of dollars here.
Absolutely. And that call is the key in this book. It really ends up being about, you know, how people survive when they're getting shocked with these high utility rates by these monopolies. And when you take on a monopoly, as I did, and their bank partners, I might add, if you're following the book, you know, there are risks. And so I, you know, to me, you have to stand up for what you believe in. And as a young mayor, I didn't hesitate to do that. And this story becomes important now because it's a guide to the kind of forces that can work behind the scenes to try to usurp people's rights to have a government they can call their own. But it also tells how to fight back, because ultimately it's about a victory. And, you know, as you pointed out, I live to tell about it.
When during all this going on, during your term as a very young mayor, Dennis, were there ever days that you sat in your office and said, what in the hell did I get myself into? Or did what was going on fuel you and keep you going?
Oh, I couldn't be bossed or intimidated. I just kept going. You know, let me tell you, you do think You do give some thought when a high-powered rifle shot misses your head by a fraction. When you learn there's an assassination plot, it's not like you overlook that. But you have to stay focused. If you're there for a purpose, you're there to represent people. You can't be afraid. You know, I look at life this way. You can't walk in fear and faith at the same time. You have to have faith in the people, faith in God. You have to have faith. And so I that kept me going. You know, no, I wasn't, you know, no, I never thought for a second, like, what the heck am I doing here? No, I knew exactly what I was doing. And apparently there were some forces in and around the community that knew what I was doing, too.
Mm. You eventually, after a couple of years after you leave the mayor's office, you get elected to Congress, serve multiple terms in the House from Ohio. You develop a national spotlight, a reputation there. Your name became more prominent in the U.S. What did you learn, Dennis, from all those terms in the House?
Stand up for what you believe in. Don't hesitate to do that. I mean, I you know, when I learned in Cleveland, led me to lead the effort against the war in Iraq and organized 125 Democratic members. You know, I've been in Stamford, I've been in Bridgeport, I've been in those communities, and I know that, you know, these are communities that are really connected and very concerned about not just what's happening in their town, but in their country. And so when I found the skills that I developed in Cleveland enabled me to see through the lies, to be able to develop the ability to be able to see what's real and what isn't. And I called it as I saw it back in 2002, warned that we should not go to war against Iraq, that they didn't have anything to do with 9/11 or Al-Qaeda's role in 9/11. And those skills are the same skills I brought to the office of mayor, but I developed them as a kid who grew up in the streets of the city. I mean, my parents never owned a home. We were renters. And by the time I was 17, we lived in 21 different places, including a couple cars. And so, you know, I came out of the streets, including politics, and I didn't know anybody anything except the people who put me in office.
So when I ask folks like you, Dennis, with a famous name who write books like this, I always ask them, and you're not going to escape the question either, who plays you in the movie? Which leading man right now plays Dennis Kucinich when this gets made into a major motion picture?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've had so many feelers out since
really
coming forward. Oh, absolutely!
Wow.
Well, let me tell you a story. When I left office, I had a meeting for 4.5 hours in New York City with Marty Bregman of Serpico and
yeah.
Al Pacino.
Great movie.
And Al Pacino.
Oh, great movie.
But let me tell you, I couldn't, and you know, Pacino was there at the meeting too. I couldn't write the story because it was too close to it. Today, you know, I'm still at it. I'm not ready to rest and watch the movies. So I'm not going to speculate as to who that might be because I'm still in motion.
All right, Dennis, listen, if you come to Connecticut again through Bridgeport or Fairfield County, we'll let you come to the studio here. We'll put the headphones on you. We'll give you the phone bank, and you can go back to your old gig. How's that?
You're on.
The name of the book is The Division of Light and Power. Former Cleveland mayor, Ohio congressman, two-time presidential candidate Dennis Kucinich. Dennis, it's been a pleasure. Let's keep in touch. Thank you.
Paul, I will do that. Thanks. The book's on sale now, and I'm not.
All right. Thanks, Dennis. Appreciate it. Be good. Dennis Kucinich right there. Listen, love him or hate him, he's a character, and listen, he is still is one of the prominent liberal left voices in the country. But listen, like a lot of guys and gals on that side of the aisle, he's passionate and stood up for the ratepayers of his city in Cleveland and almost got whacked because of it. So pick it up, folks. Amazon.com, wherever you get your books, The Division of Light and Power. Dennis Kucinich still going great. He's 74 years old. And see that? A former radio talk show host, too. See that? Maybe there's a future. Republican State House member, state rep, portions of Wallingford and Cheshire. Craig is also the ranking member on the legislature's Judiciary Committee, as in law writing. Craig, it's Paul here again. How are you, sir?
Hey, Paul. How are you?
I'm good, my friend. It's a Friday, so that always makes it better. So, Craig, this is going to go into a special session now, the marijuana bill, and it's 300 pages. I know it has to be written in legalese. Everybody realizes that, but I think people, Craig, would be interested to know, what are some of the areas, some of the major areas, some of the things actually in this bill that the Republican caucus, at least, believes need a more thorough airing out and debate, if for nothing else, Craig, to let people know they're there? What are some of these areas?
Sure. So one that's very particular to me is there's no cap on the amount of THC that a product can have. So I'm hearing that in Colorado, for instance, they're mutating plants and some of their products have up to 90 to 95% THC. Now, my understanding is that marijuana grown naturally in the field only has about 5% THC.
Mm-hmm.
So that's of significant concern. I think that there should be a cap of 10%, but there is no cap in this legislation. That's a major concern. Another area is, you know, a lot of people are in favor of home grow, and, you know, they would say that this bill allows home grow, but that's actually a fallacy. What it says is that home grow can start July 1, 2023. You mm-hmm. can have 3 mature plants and 3 immature plants. However, in the meantime, there's going to be a report from the Department of Consumer Protection on whether or not the feasibility of home grow is justifiable. So, you know, there's probably being a recommendation saying we shouldn't do home grow. So before that goes into place, that report is supposed to be issued. That's another area of concern.
So Craig, on that point, so is the concern that Consumer Protection Commissioner Siegel there, I believe, if she's still there, so they may come out with a contrary opinion on that portion of the bill?
Yes, certainly. You know, disappointingly, when we had the public hearing, nobody from the Department of Public Health came and testified on whether or not marijuana was good for our residents. Similarly, nobody from the Department of Mental Health and Addiction appeared for the public hearing either. So, you know, I fully expect that when that report is issued, they're probably going to be adverse. But some people are looking to get this bill across the finish line with the position that home grow is in here. And that's just not true.
Amazing. Craig, hang on. I'll be right back with you. State Rep. Craig Fishbein is the guest, Republican, a ranking member on Judiciary, giving us a little bit more of an inside kind of view as to what's actually in this marijuana bill, what isn't. And there you go. You find out there's no cap on THC, and the State Department of Consumer Protection hasn't even weighed in on this officially. Traffic and weather together, back with Craig after this on WICC. And yep, for about the past 2 weeks, everybody talking about if and or when Connecticut gets recreational marijuana. Craig Fishbein with a few more minutes with us. Craig, the ranking Republican member on the legislature's Judiciary Committee. Craig, as we move further into this, concerns from a law enforcement point of view, things in the bill that maybe you have heard from law enforcement they don't like, and you yourself as an attorney find a little murky.
Yeah, so it does prohibit one from smoking marijuana and operating a motor vehicle. However, it also precludes an officer who sees someone smoking marijuana in a vehicle from stopping that vehicle.
Oh, come on.
Similarly.
So wait, hold on. A cop can see somebody with an obvious joint in a car or vehicle and that's not enough due cause for a stop?
That is correct. Not even a joint, but a bowl, a hookah, a bong, right? All of that stuff.
You mean a water pipe. They're not bongs anymore.
Water pipe. That's right. Yes. You know, similarly, consumption of the product by one under the age of 21 is precluded by this. But if an officer pulls over a car, and let's say it's occupied by four 18-year-olds, mm-hmm. and the officer can clearly smell marijuana, they can't do anything. It's not cause to search the vehicle solely based upon the smell of marijuana. So law enforcement, I know, is very concerned about those aspects of this law. I mean, there's labor issues also.
I'm sorry, Craig, but I'm glad you brought that up. That was my next question. I get calls from people all the time and say, hey, what are the aspects if I have an employee when this becomes legal, if and when it happens? What protections as an employer do I have?
Not many, quite frankly. The consumption on the job can be precluded, but being under the influence thereof it's really murky in this bill. And, you know, to that point, it also requires that anybody that gets involved in this industry be governed by labor peace agreements, which basically says that this whole industry is going to be unionized. So it's forced unionization, and that those agreements have to bar the ability to strike, walk off the job, those kinds of things that are inherent to being a union member, which is, you know, very troublesome, probably in violation of federal law. And similarly, project labor agreements, any construction industry that gets involved with creating a distribution facility, manufacturing, all of that, is also required to have project labor agreements, which have similar provisions, so the forced insertion of government in those private actions is part of this bill also.
Craig, also, we hear this word, you know, it's tossed around like a handful of Skittles, equity here, and I'm seeing plans for an equity board, who can be on this, who can't be on this, winners and losers. We have the controversy with Senator McCrory's alleged meddling and putting in something, although he hasn't really spoken in detail about that. Concerns you and the other caucus members have about this whole equity process and the awarding, Craig, of what could be some very lucrative and influential permissions and licenses to grow and sell this stuff?
Yeah, there are a lot of concerns there. You know, for instance, just to be a social equity applicant, that individual has to have income of no more than 3 times the median average for the state, which is approximately $80,000. So that means that one can have income of up to, was that 240?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. $240,000 on an annual basis. You know, when I'm looking at social equity, you know, my concept of social equity is someone who has been negatively impacted. They're not making more money than I do, on an annual basis.
You
right?
and me both, brother.
Right. Social equity. So, you know, yeah, that is a major part of this. And starting with 2029, none of the licensing fees actually go to the general fund at all. It's 75% to the social equity fund and 25% to prevention. So, you know, when people out there say we're going to get, you know, millions of dollars from this, that social equity, you know, this really isn't a marijuana bill. It's a labor bill. It's a social equity bill. I wish we could just debate marijuana, but this is a lot of other things as well.
Yeah, you know, and Craig, I said that the other day when I was talking about this, one of the days, you know, I sat back and I said, why are we doing this? What is the purpose of this, Craig? And I'm wondering out loud here, and I'll do that again, seeing you brought it up. Is marijuana just a cover for that nobody wants to kind of, you know, shake the feathers here because they use the equity term here? Is this kind of camouflage, if you will, for, as you say, just another, you know, long-term revenue stream here?
Yeah, I fully believe that the social equity aspect of this is merely to buy votes. I mean, we see that all too often in the legislature. You know, a few years ago, we debated this when we were just dealing with marijuana. There was a lot of opposition from the cities because they know what it's done to their communities.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And now when we have this social equity aspect, you all of a sudden see a lot of people turning around and voting for it. And it has nothing to do with whether or not Potter's good for their community. It has to do with, you know, whether or not they can say to their community, I've brought you millions of dollars. And that's unfair.
Craig, finally, there have been kind of cage rattling already. We heard Speaker Ritter, one of your compadres on the other side of the aisle there in the House, say, well, you know, if this doesn't happen, we can bring up anything that the minority might not like. Is that going to be their crowbar in this whole thing when this gets started next week?
You would hope not. I mean, this bill is really horrible as it's presented. I mean, I keep on finding holes in it. And, you know, we didn't have a lot of time to review. So I would hope that whatever bill we're voting on is actually fixes things. But, you know, they're always throwing things at us in Hartford that we don't like. So, I mean, how much more worse can they make it?
All right, Craig, listen, good luck. We'll keep in touch, you and I will, on this. And if you find those rats in the bill and stuff that is just not good, let people know about it. Because, listen, it can, I think if it's a bad bill, it's a bad bill. If it's good, pass it. If not, you know, let's get the garbage out of it. You know, far be it from me to say that, but I'm just flapping my gums here on the radio. Craig, thank you.
Have a good weekend.
Well, Craig, thank you, my friend. We'll be in touch down the line next week. Thanks. Craig Fishbein here on WICC, the ranking member on judiciary. What did he say there? That after 2029, the vast majority of all this tax revenue is not going to end up going in the general fund? Oh, you just knew it, didn't you?